Joining us on the program now, very excited about our next guest from the Republican State Leadership Committee, Edith George, the political director at that organization, joins us. Edith, how are you this morning?
Doing well, Jeff. How's everything back home?
I guess it's going. It could be worse in a lot of places, but we could be struggling, grappling with the COVID-19 stuff, but it appears to be going well. I wanted to get you on. This is, I think, a grossly uncovered discussion story by the media, but really everything that went on down ballot. First of all, I don't think anybody in the media was expecting it, but secondly, it's an important story. Just the success Republicans had in these state houses and getting control of them and why it's important. First, kind of explain to our listeners what the RSLC is, and then we can talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. So at the RSLC, we're the Republican State Leadership Committee. We pride ourselves on being the only 50-state organization that focuses on elections at the state level. So that's anywhere from legislative races to Republican lieutenant governors, secretaries of state, ag commissioners, and we also have the Judicial Fairness Initiative, which is kind of a subcommittee under the RSLC. You're absolutely right, Jeff. We had a really great Tuesday night, and honestly, we've had a really great month since then with different elections and races getting certified over the last couple of weeks. Going into this, we knew we had an uphill battle because, Democrats, to be very honest, and I think Alabama kind of definitely was on the winning end of this. 10 years ago, we were all in on redistricting. And because of it, we were able to pick up enough seats and enough legislatures to have a really good say in what the line drawing process and the map drawing process was going to look like post-census last 10 years ago. And so that was what was at stake this time around again. And you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, especially this election year, the top of the ballot, the federal stuff, that's the sexy stuff. That's what everyone's talking about. And that's where a lot of the money was going. But our job was to get out there and really, kind of sound the alarms and say, hey, guys, if we fall asleep at the wheel here and if we don't, kind of wake up to the fact that we have a huge year ahead of us, we have the census taking place as we speak. We're going to have redistricting in about a year or two. We need to be involved. We need to be active, and we can't let Democrats think that we're snoozing. If not, they're going to come in and they're going to wipe us out. And quite frankly, they're going to do exactly to us what we did to them 10 years ago. And so that was what was at stake. We had identified as part of those priorities, 12 plus an additional two priority, redistricting states where essentially, the legislature has a big hand in drawing the maps, and so it was our duty, in a sense, to maintain Republican control in their states, or in some cases, stay out of super minorities. And so that was our big goal. And so we had these two digits that we would always, kind of reference, and it was 42-136. And in those 12 states, as few as 42 legislative seats could determine up to 136 congressional shift at the federal level post-redistricting. And so that was what was really at stake. It was, quite frankly, the future of our country for the next 10 years. It was control at the federal level. And really, when pitching it to our constituents and our voters, it was the path that this nation could take in the next 10 years. And so, honestly, I think Democrats kind of really showed their true nature this last year with a, flurry of socialist rhetoric and proposals and policies. And, it kind of helped us in doing our jobs in places like the suburbs where, it was no secret that Republicans had been hurting in the last 3 years, 3.5, 4 years, we were able to make a comeback. And I think a big part of it was both, us kind of pushing back on that narrative that we were seeing from the left, but also in cases where we had already elected Republican leaders, it was highlighting what these leaders were doing for the American people during this time of uncertainty, during this time of, you know, record highs in unemployment, healthcare being a top priority, getting kids back to school, but doing all of this safely, right? And I think, you know, we were able to get our message out there. We were able to be smarter about it. You know, when you compare how much money the Democrats spent just at the state level, which was $500 million, billion with a B, was spent on these races, you know, and at the end of the day, to give you a perspective of how well we did, you know, going into November, we had control of 59 out of the 99 legislative chambers that exist. We walked away with 62 out of the 99. So we picked up three. And right now, we have 31 states that are controlled by Republicans as opposed to 29 going into the November election. So you're absolutely right. We had a really good night and I wish more people would talk about it, but I'm happy where we stand right now, going into such an important redistricting cycle, going into such important midterm elections. But at the end of the day, the work is not done and we have to keep fighting.
Well, in those state houses, I guess it does to some degree really highlight, you know, the Democrats really look at a top heavy approach to government, and they focus, it seems to maybe, which would be a benefit to your cause, that the focus at the top of the ballot and the top races on the ballot, I would say for the last 10 years have been very underwhelming. That they have really lost a lot of ground by ceding control of this battlefield.
I think you're right, Jeff. And I think, you know, a couple of things on that. No, I think that the electorate is much smarter than we give them credit for. When you really hone in on some of these numbers, what we saw was, you know, you had people that went and voted, you know, Democrat at the top of the ticket, but then at the local and state level voted for Republicans. I think North Carolina is an excellent example of that. When you look at the statewide level and then down to the local level, I mean, folks were literally jumping left, right on those ballots. So you have to account for an audience that is more tuned in to what's actually happening, an audience that's making their own decision. You know, they're kind of not buying the regular attack ads that say, you know, X, Y, and Z. They're doing their research, which I think is a really good thing. And the other factor that I think played a huge role in all of this is, you know, Democrats thought that, and maybe it did help them at the top of the ticket, but they thought that not doing anything was doing enough. And so you didn't see this kind of grassroots momentum that we've seen in the past from Democrats to go out and knock on doors and make phone calls. And, you know, the irony behind that is what made the Obama campaign successful, right? It was this enormous grassroots community building where people felt like they were a part of this movement. They felt like they were part of this bigger cause. You know, that didn't exist this time around. And then what we also saw was, you know, they were kind of going back to their old playbook, especially some of these independent groups where, you know, 2 weeks out, 3 weeks out, they were dumping literally millions of dollars on television across these targeted states, you know, to kind of make that last minute push. But, you know, at this point, a lot of folks had already made up their minds. A lot of folks had already voted, quite frankly. And so you look at this money spent, not targeted, kind of really across the board, hoping to grab whatever they could in the last couple of weeks. But by then, you know, my argument, it was too late. And a big part of what we did this cycle was decide that we wanted to spend early. You know, we knew we were going to have to spend more than ever before. And I think that investment really paid off in the long run.
Joined by Edith George of the Republican State Leadership Committee. Edith, the state really did well. I guess Iowa, New Hampshire, the places we think of probably in Alabama is like, well, those are the early primary states. But those are early primary states because they tend to be the swing states where the electorate, they don't do the straight ticket voting. It's a place that's kind of a believed traditionally to be purple. To have success in places like that, I think that it shows that your game plan is at least functioning as it's supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, a big part of it, right, was being smart about the decisions we had to make. And they're not easy ones, right? And I think Iowa is an excellent example of that. Iowa kind of talks through a little bit of everything that we encountered, which is to say, tough decisions. We knew we were going to lose some seats. We could see it in the data. But we also knew we had a really excellent pathway to pick up seats. And so there was a little bit of chess that we had to play there. We really had to hedge our bets. You know, at some point we had to give up in some places to double down in other places. And it's how we were able to keep our majority. And like I said, pick up seats even though we lost them. Also a state where, you know, 3 weeks left until Election Day, Bloomberg came in, dumped, I think it was $1 million into the efforts there, which obviously always, you know, gets us a little nervous leading into Election Day. Florida, another state where, you know, we were cautiously optimistic going into the election, knowing that the margins were slim. Uncomfortably slim, but there still was a good margin. But, you know, they thought that that was a state that they could easily flip at least one chamber. They weren't able to flip any chambers. Instead, we were able to pick up seats in both of them. And then Arizona is my personal favorite story to tell, where, you know, we had a 2-seat majority on the Senate side and a 1-seat majority on the House side. You know, we were very nervous about the outcome of Arizona. And when it was all said and done, we were able to maintain both of them. Similarly, you know, on the House side, we lost a seat, but we picked up a seat. On the Senate side, there were some primaries that had happened earlier in the year that made us a little nervous, but nonetheless, we were able to maintain some of the seats there, lost one, but were able to still keep our majority. And that's what it all comes down to is, you know, the investments that were made had to be done intelligently, but really based off of the data. And I you know, pride myself in what we as a party have done with our data and how much money has been invested in it, because I really do feel that that was kind of what made the difference at the end of the day.
Well, on that front, on the data front, I listened to you. You did an interview with former Speaker Newt Gingrich, I guess, earlier. But you indicated you didn't really anticipate this good of an outcome to do this well head into it. You were still nervous heading into to Election Day. But tell me, the way we do data, the way we do polling, is how sound are those prognostications? They failed, I think, at the Senate level and maybe some congressional races and the presidential level in some states as well. But when we get down to maybe more localized ways of trying to figure these politics out, how well do those stand up?
Yeah. So, you know, I can't speak to the federal levels. I can speak to what we saw in our data. And, you know, there was two things that kind of kept coming up. One was you definitely had an exhausted audience, if you will. And so towards the end, it was so difficult to get, you know, complete surveys, to get complete results. And so, you know, when you don't have complete, it does make the polling process much more difficult. You can't get a clear picture of what's happening. But what we were seeing was in the polling that we had done, you know, I would say 90% of the time, we had everything fall within the margin. Now, again, that can be anywhere from a 3-point margin to a 6-point margin, depending on, you know, how you're conducting the polling, if it's all live calls, if it's all, you know, text, email, so on and so forth, kind of mixed mode. So that was kind of one of the things we saw. But again, going back to the data, you know, the national party has invested so much money in kind of these national models. And so what we were able to do was take, you know, say a statewide model in Texas, for example, and apply it to the district level to get a sense for, okay, this is how the state feels as a whole. If we were to apply these kind of data sets to the specific district, to the specific area, let's see what we're getting here in terms of how people feel about the defund the police movement, how people feel about, you know, getting kids back to school during, you know, the beginning of the school season in September or August. Again, we knew that the models weren't intended to be drilled down to that level, but it was the only tool that we had at the time to give us the best sense for how individuals were feeling at a much more local level. And then again, you know, investing in some of the polling that similarly we weren't going to be spot on, but at least we weren't driving blind. And so, you know, to your point about my interview, we were always cautiously optimistic going into it. The numbers definitely made us feel good. But at the end of the day, we knew that, you know, during a time where people are getting calls probably 5-10 times a day, whether it's to answer a poll or to remember to go vote or return your absentee ballot or whatever the case may be, there's so much volatility involved in answering one of these and in the electorate as it is that, you know, we certainly didn't want to slow up if it was a state where we just kept getting good numbers. But at the same time, there came a point where we had to trust that, you know, we've gotten 5 polls now in our top district saying that they're in a really good place. Maybe let's, you know, reassess some of the other states and see if it's worth maybe kind of putting a little more money behind a state where we haven't seen that same trajectory. And so again, they were difficult decisions to make, especially when, you know, you are talking about these big swing states that are huge every couple of years. Right. So, you know, I think in part it was a little bit of that, and I'm going to say a little bit of luck as well.
Edith, we got to wrap it on that note. Folks want to find out more about your organization, find you on social media, tell them where to go.
Absolutely. So if you're interested in getting to know us a little bit better, there's always the website, rslc.gop. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Our tags are at RSLC on both platforms. We're also on Instagram as the Republican State Leadership Committee. Again, our acronym is the go-to, RSLC, and again, rslc.gop.
As always, thanks for making time for us this morning, Edith.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It was a pleasure.
Ian George of the Republican State Leadership Committee.